Inner calm. The goal of meditation is to liberate the mind from ignorance and suffering. How do we do that? As stated previously, just wishing will not make it so. We have to apply a systematic method that will free our mind from the veils that obscure it. Since it is the mind itself that has to do the job, first we have to prepare it properly. If it can't hold still for a minute, how can it free itself from its own ignorance? The situation is like that of a monkey, an analogy used earlier. In this case, the monkey is tethered by numerous ropes and continually jumps about in all directions, trying to get loose. He jumps around so much that neither he nor anybody who wants to help him can untie a single knot. So the first thing that has to be done is to calm him down and make him pay attention. Calming the monkey doesn't mean forcibly holding him still while keeping him tied up. The goal here is to profit from a moment of calm to free him. In the same way, we must take advantage of the respite that comes with a relatively calm, clear, and workable mind, to free it from the bonds created by wild thoughts, conflicting emotions, and confusion. The obstacles to attaining this goal are automatic thought patterns, perpetuated by our habitual tendencies, and the distractions and fabrications of the conceptual mind that distort reality. Thus, we have to overcome these unfavorable conditions. Mastering the mind does not mean imposing an additional set of constraints on it that will make it even more tense and cramped than it already is. What it means is just the opposite: freeing it from the constraints of mental conditioning and inner conflicts created by dysfunctional thoughts and emotions. So, in order to recognize the fundamental nature of the mind, we have to remove the veils created by automatic thought patterns. How do we do that? Let's say we are trying to get back a key that has fallen in a pond. If we take a stick and poke about on the bottom, we'll completely muddy the water and won't have the slightest chance of spotting the key. The first thing we have to do is let the water settle until it becomes clear. After that, it will be easy to see the key and retrieve it. We must work with our mind in the same way. We have to begin by getting it clear, calm, and attentive. After that, we can use this new skill to cultivate other qualities like altruistic love and compassion, as well as developing a deeper insight into the nature of mind. In all schools of Buddhism, two basic complementary types of meditation are practiced to attain these goals. One is calm abiding, shamatha in Sanskrit. The other is deeper insight, vipassana in Sanskrit. Shamatha is peaceful state of mind, clear and perfectly concentrated on its object. Vipassana is the deep insight into the nature of mind and of the phenomenal world. We acquire this deep insight first by detailed analysis of consciousness, and then through contemplation, that is, through inner experience. Vipassana allows us to see through illusion, so we can cease to be a victim of afflictive emotions. In essence, shamatha prepares the ground by making the mind into a manageable tool that is precise and effective. Vipassana then liberates the mind from the yoke of mental afflictions and the veils of ignorance. Most of the time, our mind is unstable, whim-driven and disorderly, and it bounces back and forth between hope and fear. It is self-centered, hesitant, fragmented, confused, sometimes even absent, as well as weakened by internal contradictions and a feeling of insecurity. On top of that, it rebels against any kind of training and is constantly occupied by a kind of inner chatter that keeps up a background noise we are barely aware of. These dysfunctional states are nothing more than products of the mind itself. Therefore, it is only logical that it is possible for the mind itself to remedy them. That is the object of practicing shamatha and vipassana. So the idea is to gradually progress from a state of mind where the unfavorable conditions just described prevail, to another state that is characterized by stable attention, inner peace and clarity, confidence, courage, openness towards others, benevolence, the ability to deal with emotions, and other qualities of a vast and calm mind. In the beginning, the practice of shamatha works to pacify the turbulence of our thoughts. In order to do that, we sharpen our powers of concentration by using the support of something we rarely pay any attention to, the coming and going of our breath. Normally, unless we are out of breath from some effort or have been holding our breath, we are hardly aware of the coming and going of the breath. This is true despite the fact that breathing is almost synonymous with being alive. Since our breathing just goes on by itself, if we can use it as a support for our concentration, we will have a tool that is precious because it is always available, and which, in addition, can play the role of a reference point, engaging concentration or distraction. This practice has three essential stages. 1. Directing the attention to a chosen object, in this case, the breath. 2. Maintaining the attention on this object. 3. Being mindful of the characteristics of the object. In Sanskrit, these three elements are called manaskara, smriti, and samprajnana. The equivalent Pali terms are manasikara, sati, and sampajana. The Tibetan terms are yidlab yedpa, dranpa, and shesbjin. Meditation, mindfulness of the breath. Sit in a comfortable position. If possible, adopt the 7-point posture described earlier, or at least take a position in which you are erect and well-balanced. Here, mindfulness consists of remaining continuously aware of your breathing, without forgetting it or letting yourself be distracted. Breathe calmly and naturally. Concentrate all your attention on the coming and going of the breath. More specifically, focus your attention on the sensation created by the passage of air through your nostrils, the place where you perceive it most acutely. The precise spot varies from person to person. It might be at the opening of the nostrils, a little further inside, or higher up in the sinuses. Also, notice the moment when breathing is suspended, between the out-breath and the following in-breath. After that, concentrate again on the point where you feel the breath passing. Then also note the point when the breath halts for a moment, between the in-breath and the following out-breath. Stay concentrated in the same way during the next cycle of breathing, breath after breath, without getting tense, but also without relaxing to the point of falling into a sluggish state. Your awareness of the breath should be clear and calm. The Buddha gave the example of a cloud of dust raised by the wind. The dust was dispelled by a rain shower, giving way to a pure and brilliant sky. The dust, here, is the agitation and confusion of the mind. Concentration on the breath is the saving rain shower, and the pure sky is calm and inner clarity. Avoid intentionally altering the rhythm of your breath. Your breathing will probably slow a little, but that should be allowed to happen naturally. Whether your breath is long or short, simply be aware of the fact that it is long or short. Sooner or later you will wander into a state of distraction, accompanied by a lot of thoughts, into a vague, sleepy state, or even a combination of both. That is, into a state of confusion marked by erratic thought associations. It is at this point that vigilance has to be applied. As soon as you notice that you have lost your concentration, just resume it, without adding to your distraction by feeling regret or guilt. Noticing that you have been distracted already marks the return of your mindfulness. Just come back to the breath, like a butterfly coming back to a flower, after having fluttered around here and there for no apparent reason. When thoughts appear, don't try to block them. which is not possible anyway because they are already there. Just avoid feeding them. Let them pass through the field of your awareness, the way a bird passes through the sky without leaving a trace. Occasionally, you can also take the distraction itself as the object of your mindfulness. Then, once your mind has become attentive again, return your attention to the breath. If other physical sensations appear, for example, pain from sitting in the same position for a long time, do not rebel against the pain or become overwhelmed by it. Include it in your mindfulness, and then return to observing your breath. If the pain becomes so acute that it disturbs your meditation, it is a good idea to relax your position for a few moments, or practice mindful walking for a short time. Then resume your meditation on the breath, with a fresh mind and renewed concentration. Variation 1. One method for reviving your concentration when it has become too weak is to count your breath. For example, you can mentally count 1 at the end of a complete out-breath, in-breath cycle, then 2 at the end of the next cycle, and so on up to 10. Then begin again with 1. This will help maintain your concentration. If you prefer, you can also count 1 at the end of an in-breath and 2 at the end of the following out-breath. This method and the ones that follow can be applied from time to time whenever it seems helpful, but it is not necessary to count your breath during your whole meditation. Variation 2. Another method is to mentally repeat 1-1-1-1-1 fairly rapidly during the course of an in-breath, then 2-2-2-2-2 in the same way during the course of the next out-breath. For the next cycle, count 3-3-3-3-3 during the in-breath and 4-4-4-4-4 during the out-breath. Count that way up to 10, then start a new series. Another possibility is to count rapidly from 1 to 10 during the in-breath and then do the same during the out-breath. The object of these various ways of counting the breath is to refresh your concentration when it becomes sluggish or distracted. Variation 3. Instead of observing the breath itself, you may concentrate on feeling the up and down movement of the abdomen that accompanies your breathing. Variation 4. You can also associate a simple phrase with the coming and going of the breath. For example, while breathing out, you can mentally say, "May all beings be happy," and while breathing in, "May all their suffering be dispelled." Variation 5. Practitioners who recite mantras can combine silent recitation with attention to the breath. Thus, with Om Mani Padme Hum, which is the mantra of the Buddha of Compassion, Avalokiteshvara in Sanskrit, you say Om while breathing in, Mani Padme while holding the breath for a brief moment, and Hum while breathing out. A mantra is not generally constructed like a phrase with a literal meaning. Here, Om is the syllable that opens the mantra and confers on it a power of transformation. Mani, or jewel, refers to the jewel of altruistic love and compassion. Padme, the genitive form of Padma, or lotus, refers to the fundamental nature of consciousness, our original goodness, which, as a lotus rises immaculately out of the mud, remains intact even in the midst of the mental poisons we have fabricated. Hum is the syllable that gives the mantra its power of accomplishment. Variation 6. Normally, you should not influence the movement of the breath, nor slow down at the transitional point between in-breaths and out-breaths. But in this variant, you concentrate for a few instants on the pause in breathing as the breath dissipates at the end of an out-breath. This is also the point at which discursive thoughts are suspended for a few instants. During this brief moment, rest in this clear, bright space, calm and free from mental fabrications. You should not, however, conceptualize this experience. Just recognize it is a basic aspect of your mind that is always present behind the curtain of thoughts. These different variations can be practiced as you choose in order to improve your concentration. The Four Foundations of Mindfulness. The following meditations are intended to cultivate mindfulness and help develop a clearer understanding of the nature of mind and phenomena. You will successively focus your attention on your body, feelings, mind, and on phenomena at large, anything that is experienced. Meditation 1. Mindfulness of the body. Adopt a comfortable, relaxed posture and direct your awareness to your body. When walking, be aware that you are walking. When standing, be aware that you are standing. When sitting, be aware that you are sitting. When lying down, be aware that you are lying down. Be aware of bending down or straightening up, bending forwards or backwards, lowering or lifting your head, eating, drinking, and so on. You can also be mindful of your breath, as described earlier. Then, concentrate on the various parts of your body, one after the other. Begin with your head, hair, ears, eyes, mouth, teeth, etc. Go down along your neck, shoulders, arms, hands and fingernails. Move to the chest, the waist, going down to the soles of your feet. Go up again. Then visualize the inside of your body, the flesh, the tendons, the bones, the heart, the lungs, the veins and arteries, and the blood running through them, the other bodily fluids, the liver and the intestines, and focus your mindfulness on them. Finally, simply place your awareness on whichever perception of the body arises in your mind. Meditation 2. Mindfulness of feelings. Whenever you perceive any feeling, whether pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, simply embrace it with your awareness. Feel the breeze passing on your face, the touch between your two hands, or the point of contact of your feet with the ground. If the feeling is pleasant, simply be aware of its pleasantness. If it is unpleasant, be aware of its unpleasantness. In the latter case, for instance, the sheer awareness of the unpleasantness replaces the reaction of rejection that usually takes place. If you experience a diffuse feeling of your inner organs, concentrate on that. You may also concentrate on some parts of the body where you may not have any particular sensation at the moment, like your forehead or ears. Become aware of the subtle feeling of their presence. Finally, try to investigate the very nature of feelings. Aren't they just movements of the mind? Isn't it the same awareness that perceives them all without being affected by them? Meditation 3. Mindfulness of mind. When thoughts arise, whether you follow after them or try to chase them, you often feel overwhelmed by them. Instead, simply be aware of your thoughts and watch them like a spectator. Whether your mind enters a state of craving, resentment, or confusion, whether it is focused or scattered, dull or lucid, calm or agitated, be mindful of these states. As will be explained later, you will also need to understand the nature of these thoughts and find ways to free yourself from afflictive mental states. Meditation 4. Mindfulness of phenomena. Be fully aware of whatever comes into the field of your experience and becomes an object for your mind. Forms, sounds, odors, tastes, textures, thoughts, emotions. Joy, sadness, desire, fear, irritation, dullness, and so on. Whatever arises becomes a support for your meditation. Watch how these phenomena appear, remain for a while, and vanish. Reflect on their transitory and illusory nature. When your mind jumps from one phenomenon to another, sounds, forms, smells, etc., and many thoughts flash through your mind in quick succession, if you remain mindful, the objects that attract your attention and thoughts themselves may change, but you will be able to achieve a continuous, all-pervading, panoramic mindfulness. Concentration on an object. There are many other ways to cultivate concentration and mental calm. These methods are of two kinds, with or without an object of concentration. The object of concentration can be the coming and going of the breath, as I described earlier. But your attention can also be placed on other physical sensations, on an external object, on an emotion, or on a visualized image. The external object can be a completely ordinary one, such as a small stone, a flower, or a candle flame. As with the breathing, the training consists in letting the mind rest attentively on the chosen object, bringing it back to this object when you notice you have become distracted. The object can also be a symbolic or figurative image associated with a spiritual path. For example, for those who are practicing the Buddhist path, a painting or statue of the Buddha. You begin by concentrating on the external representation long enough so that all its details are present in your mind. Then, concentrate on the mental image of the external representation. The following is the synopsis of an instruction given by Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche. Meditation. Sit down and assume the seven-point posture. Let your mind calm down for a few moments, and then visualize Buddha Shakyamuni in the space in front of you. He is seated on a moon disc, which is resting on a lotus and a throne held up by eight lions. His body is resplendent, like a mountain of gold. With his right hand, he touches the ground next to his right knee, in the gesture of taking the earth to witness. His left hand rests in his lap, in the gesture of equanimity, and holds a begging bowl filled with nectar. He wears the three monastic robes, and from his body emanates infinite rays of light and wisdom that fill the universe. Bring this image to life. Imagine that the Buddha you have visualized is not inert like a drawing or a statue. It is not made of flesh and blood either. His body is luminous and transparent like a rainbow, radiant with wisdom and compassion. Try to concentrate one-pointedly on this complete visualization. You may then turn your attention to the details, to the perfect oval of the face, to the eyes filled with wisdom and love, on the harmoniously proportioned nose and ears, on the smile, on the rays of light streaming out from the body. Progressively extend your concentration to all the details of the Buddha's form, from top to bottom, and from bottom to top, giving it the same level of meticulous attention a painter would give. Again, visualize the whole form of the Buddha, while retaining each detail as distinctly as possible. To reinforce your concentration, immediately neutralize anything that might disturb your mind. If your thoughts get agitated so that they keep you from developing a clear image, slightly lower your gaze, which normally rests in space, and concentrate on the lower part of the Buddha, the crossed legs, the throne held up by the lions or the lotus seat. The effect of that will be to reduce your mental agitation. If your mind falls into a state of sluggishness, slackness or dull indifference, raise your eyes and concentrate on the upper part of the visualization, the Buddha's face, his eyes, the point between his eyebrows. If your visualization is not clear, don't give up, but keep trying to get it more refined and precise. If it is clear, hold it in a natural way without tension. When your mind becomes stable and peaceful, examine it. Realize that the image you are visualizing is not the Buddha himself, but a projection of your mind, whose goal is to help you cultivate concentration. Even though your mind has the ability to concentrate on an object, the mind itself cannot be found anywhere. It is impossible to locate mind, to identify its shape, color, or form, or to see where it comes from, where it stays, or where it is going. You will never find anything. The mind is not an independent entity that can be identified as such. The same is true of the body. What we call the body is simply a conglomeration of many elements put together. We give the name heap to a collection of grains, sheaf to a collection of dried straw, and crowd to a gathering of people, but none of them are entities in their own right. Likewise, for this collection of things we call the body. If you take away the skin and the flesh, the marrow, the bones, and the different organs, once they have all been separated from each other, there is no other entity present that you can identify as the body. In fact, all phenomena, in their infinite variety throughout the universe, appear as a result of particular causes and conditions coming temporarily together. You take phenomena to be things that truly exist simply because you have not examined them properly. In truth, they have no solid intrinsic existence at all. When it becomes clear that your body, the image of the Buddha you are visualizing, and all phenomena are the display of the mind, and that the mind's nature is not an entity endowed with independent existence, but rather a dynamic stream of experiences, simply remain in the recognition of that nature without wandering. Remain attentive to whether or not thoughts interrupt this recognition. When thoughts arise, be aware of them without either hindering or encouraging them. This is what is called deep insight. It is essential to bring together mental calm, shamatha, and deep insight, vipassana, in this way. Source of inspiration. Flawless shamatha is like an oil lamp that is unmoved by wind. Wherever the attention is placed, it is unwaveringly present. Awareness is vividly clear, without being sullied by laxity, lethargy, or dimness. Wherever the awareness is directed, it is steady and sharply pointed. Unmoved by adventitious thoughts, it is straight. In this way, a flawless meditative state arises in one's mind stream. And until this happens, it is important that the mind is settled in its natural state. Padmasambhava. Concentration without an object. At first, it might seem that meditation without an object would be easier than meditation with an object. But in fact, it is harder to keep your mind clear and concentrated on itself in a state of pure awareness than to concentrate on something. Concentration on an object implies a certain mental activity connected with attention, and even if it is hard to maintain this concentration, it is nevertheless easier than resting your mind in a state of perfect simplicity, devoid of all mental constructs. That being said, you should know that concentration without an object is the natural culmination of concentration with an object, and represents a further step in the understanding of the basic nature of the mind through direct experience. Meditation. Direct your mind inward and allow it to contemplate its primary quality, which is simply knowing. This faculty of knowing, which is mindfulness in its pure state, illuminates all thoughts and all perceptions. It is a constant and fundamental quality of the flow of consciousness. You can experience it even in the absence of thoughts and mental images. Try to identify this primordial aspect of all experience, and then let your mind rest a few moments in this non-dual awareness that is clear, lucid, and devoid of concepts and discursive thoughts. Source of inspiration. It is present as transparent, utter openness, without outside, without inside, an all-pervasiveness, without boundary and without direction. The wide open expanse of the view, the true condition of mind, is like sky, like space, without center, without edge, without aim. Shabka. Overcoming obstacles. Any training requires effort, and any change naturally encounters resistance. In the case of training the mind and of non-conceptual meditation, there are various obstacles that can slow your progress. Included among the obstacles discussed in traditional instructions on meditation are sluggishness and its opposite, distracted agitation, as well as the lack of perseverance and its opposite, excessive effort. Laziness. Laziness, usually interpreted as indolence or lack of motivation, can take several forms. Ordinary laziness is the fault of shying away from any effort. Its antidote consists of recalling the preciousness of human existence and of each passing moment, and contemplating the benefits of inner transformation. Reflecting on those themes allows you to rekindle your inspiration and enthusiasm. Another form of laziness is thinking, "That's not for me, it's beyond my abilities. I'd rather not get involved with it." In other words, you give up the race before you reach the starting line. To overcome this obstacle, give the potential for transformation that exists in you its true value, and look at the object of life on a larger scale. A third form of laziness is not having the determination to do immediately what you know to be the most important thing, and wasting your time instead on minor activities. To remedy this, establish priorities among your projects, and remember that while your days are numbered, ordinary activities are like waves on the ocean. There is no end to them. Distraction. This is the most common of meditation's enemies. What practitioner is not the victim of it? Distraction is completely normal, because when you begin to practice, your mind is undisciplined and chaotic, and you can't reasonably expect it to calm down immediately. So there is no reason to give up hope. The goal of meditation is precisely to make your mind smooth and manageable so that it can be concentrated or relaxed at will, and especially to free it from the tyranny of mental afflictions and confusion. The antidote to distraction is cultivating vigilance. Whenever you notice that your mind has wandered off, bring it back to the object of meditation. If you suddenly realize you have been distracted, it shows you have recovered your mindfulness. So you should be happy about this instead of being discouraged and regretful. The more often you notice that you have been distracted, the more your mindfulness is progressing. Remember also why you are meditating. Your goal is not to waste time giving free rein to your thoughts, but to use your meditation time to gain freedom from suffering. Sluggishness and agitation. These are also major obstacles that make us lose the thread of meditation. Sluggishness, or laxity, undermines the clarity of the mind. Agitation undermines its stability. The former can range from simple heaviness to sleep, with lethargy, irritation, daydreaming, or other vague and blurry mental states in between. The mind withdraws and becomes excessively inward. This kind of lack of clarity is a major obstacle precisely because you want to use your concentration to better understand the nature of the mind. As Bokar Rinpoche, a contemporary meditation master, explains, "When we look at the sea in the full light of day, We can see stones and algae on the bottom through the clear water. Meditation should have this same clarity, which allows us to be mindfully aware of the situation of our mind. By night, on the other hand, the surface of the waves is a dark and opaque mass that our vision cannot penetrate. In this same way, a dim and heavy mind, in spite of an appearance of stability, is a hindrance to meditating. The advice for countering this state is to adopt a more upright and energetic posture, to gaze somewhat upwards into the space in front of you, and to wear less clothing if you are too warmly dressed. You should also refresh your attention, putting the emphasis on the mindfulness of the present moment. Agitation is a hyperactive form of distraction, in which the mind produces a chain of thoughts that is maintained by automatic patterns and imagination. This feverish agitation keeps transporting you far away from your object of concentration. Your body is sitting quietly, but your mind is taking a world tour. When this occurs, relax your physical posture a bit, lower your gaze, and come back to yourself by recalling why you are there and what the goal of your efforts is. Lack of perseverance and excessive effort. Any kind of training requires regular effort. A lack of perseverance considerably diminishes the effects of meditation and thus reduces its power to transform us. As pointed out earlier, a big occasional effort does not have the same beneficial effect as less spectacular effort that is more constant. Sporadic efforts will not be enough to transform the mind in a deep and long-lasting way. The remedy for this weakness is, again, to reflect on the preciousness of the time that is passing, on the uncertainty of the duration of life, and on the benefits of the training you are engaged in. You might also temporarily fall into the opposite fault of excessive effort by overdoing the remedies to laxity. The tension resulting from that also ends up as a distraction to your meditation. For this reason, you have to balance your efforts and find the happy medium between tension and relaxation, as the Buddha advised the vina player to do in the example given earlier. So stop applying a particular antidote when it is no longer necessary, and let the mind rest calmly in its natural state. Excessive effort can also result from impatience or exaltation, two states that lead nowhere. If you begin climbing a high mountain at a run, your lungs will soon force you to stop. In the same way, if you draw a bow too far, it will break, or if you try to cook on too high a flame, you will end up burning your food. Demanding immediate results is an aspect of unsteadiness of mind or laziness. His Holiness the Dalai Lama jocularly remarked, "In the West, people would like enlightenment to be fast, easy, and if possible, cheap." In the same way that it takes patience to grow a crop, steadiness is indispensable for the practice of meditation. It does no good to pull on your plants to make them grow faster. 9 methods for cultivating attention. The traditional meditation texts teach 9 methods to help establish the mind in a state of equanimity and make it more stable. Bear in mind that here I am talking about mindfulness as remaining continually attentive to a chosen object of concentration. 1. Focus your mind, even if at the beginning it is only for a brief moment, on an object, following the instructions, and avoid letting your mind be carried away by images and discursive thoughts. 2. Refocus your mind repeatedly, asking yourself again and again, "Am I keeping my attention on the object?" Bring it back quickly to its object, as soon as you notice distraction has caused it to stray. To do that, you first have to recognize that your mind has been distracted. Identify the emotion or thought that has brought about this distraction, and apply the appropriate antidote. Little by little, you will develop the ability to keep your mind calm and stable for longer periods of time, and your concentration will become clearer and clearer. 3. Keep your mind on this object continuously over a longer period of time, without falling into distraction. In order to do this, focus on the instructions mentioned earlier for maintaining concentration on the mind's support. Recall those instructions and apply them with care. If you do this, you will be able to recognize distraction almost as soon as it occurs. 4. Direct your mind with care. The firmer your mind is, and the more precise it is in its concentration, the more you will be inclined to meditate. Even if your attention is not yet perfect, you will reach the point where you no longer completely lose track of the object of meditation, and you will become free from the coarsest and most disturbing forms of mental agitation. 5. Master your mind. Your concentration will become more stable, but you might fall into a subtle form of sluggishness or laxity. When your concentration deteriorates in this way, renew the sharpness and clarity of your awareness, and rekindle your inspiration and enthusiasm by considering the benefits of perfect concentration. Samadhi. 6. Pacify your mind. Heightening your mindfulness to counteract subtle mental slackness may lead to subtle agitation. When your concentration becomes too sharp, or is shaken by the subtle mental agitation that takes the form of a little conversation going on in the background of your attention, simply consider the drawbacks of agitation and distraction. This will calm your mind and make it clear and transparent, like the pure sound of a well-tuned musical instrument. 7. Pacify your mind completely by using sustained and energetic attention to abandon all attachment to meditative experiences that may arise. These experiences can appear in a number of forms, such as bliss, clarity, or absence of discursive thoughts. They can also take the form of spontaneous bursts of joy, of unshakable confidence, fear, exaltation, discouragement, certainty or doubt, renunciation of worldly concerns, passion, intense devotion, or negative views. Any of these experiences can arise for no apparent reason. They are a sign of profound changes going on in your mind. It is necessary to keep yourself from identifying with these experiences, and from attributing more importance to them than you would to the landscapes going by outside the train window. Perfectly pacified attention will cause these experiences to fade away without upsetting your mind. You will then know a profound inner peace. 8. Keep your attention concentrated on one point. After having eliminated sluggishness and mental agitation, you will develop the ability to keep your attention stable and clear through an entire meditation session. Your mind will then be like a lamp protected from the wind, whose stable and bright flame gives out maximal light. A minimal effort at the beginning of the session will then be enough to establish the mind within the flow of concentration, where it can be maintained without difficulty, remaining in its natural state, free from constraints and disturbances. 9. Rest in a state of perfect equilibrium. When your mind has become completely used to concentrating on a single point, it will remain in a state of equanimity that will arise spontaneously and perpetuate itself without effort. The development of inner calm. Gradually, your mind will calm down. However, just the opposite may seem to be happening. When you try to calm your mind, it may seem that you have more thoughts than before. The truth is that they have not increased in number, but rather you have become aware of how many there are. I have already pointed out that it is neither possible nor desirable to block thoughts. It is important, however, to gain some mastery over the thought process if you want to eliminate the causes of suffering and make possible the development of genuine well-being. Automatic thought patterns only strengthen our dependence on the causes of suffering, while regular meditation, far from bringing about any kind of stupor or destroying spontaneity, leads to the freedom that comes with mastery of the mind and inner peace. The Buddhist texts illustrate the pacification of turbulent thoughts through the metaphor of a roaring waterfall that calms down gradually as its waters flow into the plains and finally run into the vast ocean. This meditative development occurs in five stages, which are portrayed in five images. 1. A waterfall tumbling from a cliff. Thoughts continuously add up and multiply. They seem more numerous than before because you are becoming aware of the movement of your mind. 2. A torrent hurtling through successive gorges. The mind alternates between periods of rest and activity. 3. A broad river flowing with few obstructions. The mind becomes occasionally agitated when it is disturbed by significant events, but otherwise remains calm. 4. A lake ruffled by a few waves. The mind is mildly agitated on the surface, but remains calm and clear in the depths. 5. A peaceful ocean. Unshakable and effortless concentration no longer requires antidotes against wandering thoughts. Such a development is not accomplished in one day or even a few weeks, but sooner or later, the moment will come when you see real progress. We readily accept the idea that it takes time and perseverance to master an art, a sport, a language, or any other discipline. Why should it not be the same with training the mind? It is a worthwhile adventure. We are not talking about acquiring some ordinary ability, but rather of acquiring mastery and a way of being that will determine the quality of our whole life. Source of inspiration. At the beginning, nothing comes. In the middle, nothing remains. In the end, nothing goes away. Milarepa.